We're here on the stage at the Michael Schimmel Center for the Arts at Pace University in New York with James Lipton. I have a short stack of index cards to suggest some points to talk about, and it will be hard not to descend into imitation.
Uh-oh.
Which, of course,
you
is
already
the,
have.
It's the sincerest form of flattery.
The minute you slowed down, I knew it was me.
Mr. Lipton, of course, is best known as the creator and the host of Inside the Actor's Studio and the Bravo Network. He's also been a Broadway lyricist, a novelist, an international playboy, a producer of presidential inauguration festivities, a lifelong ballet student, the man who brought Bob Hope to China. He's ridden with the Lone Ranger and might be the first man to ever study Pilates. He has a new book out, Inside, the story of Inside the Actor's Studio. Thanks very much for letting us camp on stage with you here for a few minutes.
I'm very grateful to you for coming.
Kate Winslet sat here.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Jane Fonda, when she sat in that chair, said that when I think of the people who have been in this chair, other people have mentioned it too, it's 218 amazing people.
How did you happen to ride with the Lone Ranger? That's kind of your show business beginning.
Yeah. When I was a kid in Detroit, my father had left by that point. My mother, who was a teacher, was struggling. I was struggling too, of course. Mm-hmm. So I was doing everything I could to earn a few pennies. I was acting avocationally. I was in the Catholic Theater in Detroit, which was a very good theater group. And I was seen there and invited to try out for The Lone Ranger, which was a radio program that was broadcast three nights a week from WXYZ. And they had had a character called Dan Reed, who was the Lone Ranger's nephew, but the fellow had outgrown the part. It was a kid, and I was a kid, and I got the part. And so I rode the range with the ranger. He would say, "Hi, Silver, away," and Tonto would say, "Get him up, Scout," and I would say, "Come on, Victor." It was perfect because I was going to school, and I could get my homework done and still appear on the radio program.
Present company accepted. Is there anyone who's ever sat in this chair across from you whom you didn't like or couldn't respect?
No, because remember that I invite the guests. Mm-hmm. My criterion as dean was and is, does this person have something to teach our students? I would never invite someone I didn't respect. The whole idea of Inside the Actor's Studio, the whole idea of this craft seminar would have been violated. I happen to believe, and so do our guests, that we have created a unique archive. Certainly nothing has ever been done like it before. Mm-hmm. Probably never will again. I just regret that there weren't some magical way we could go back and have an hour or two with Shakespeare or Edmund Kean, or Sarah Bernhardt, or Eleanor Duse, or Chaplin. Can't, but at least we have captured, I think, some of the great artists of the last 40 or 50 years, because people like Anthony Quinn began in 1936. He was on the stage, so it starts then. And I really do think that 100 years from now, this archive will be of even greater value than it is now. And I think that it has real value. So do our guests. That's why they come. It's a craft archive. Imagine a television program about craft, not about gossip. Well, God knows there's plenty to gossip about with respect to these guests, but we don't. And interestingly enough, I made a vow to myself that there would be no gossip and that we would stick to craft. That was my pledge to myself and to the university and to our students and to our guests. And you know what has surprised me most, Scott, is that I thought the show would be dry. Leave aside the fact that I thought we'd have a tiny audience. I never dreamed that we'd be all over America in 125 countries. That I didn't know. But I thought the show would be rather dry for a television audience because we were going to stick to craft. And what surprised me most was that it became one of the most intimate television shows on the air. I had not a clue. Because what I'm after from the person in that chair where you're sitting is an account of the moments, the events, and the people who changed them, who shaped them, who shaped the person that's sitting in that chair, both as person and artist.
What do you think Shakespeare might have said when you asked his favorite curse word?
It would have been Elizabethan. I'm not familiar with Elizabethan cursing. It would have been, I'm sure, the equivalent of the most vulgar and earthy curse words I've had. Although I don't guarantee it, because in the book I have a whole chapter on, yes, on Pivot. And for the first time I assemble the best answers we've had to the Pivot questionnaire. And when it comes to the curse words, I did them in a particular way. Man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, man, woman. Because the men are such wimps, and the women would make Lenny Bruce blush. And they're all there, and nothing is bleeped in the book.
Yeah.
The women say such shocking things, and the men are such, honestly, such wusses. Imagine Chris Walken, who has terrified us from time to time. His favorite curse word is darn. Billy Crystal's is damn. But that's as far as they'll go. Some wouldn't even give me a curse word at all. Coppola wouldn't, and Paul Newman wouldn't. But the women, the minute I open that door, they rush through it. But in the book, I put them in that form so that everybody can see once and for all that what we really should do is let all the men go and have an all-female army, because they're much tougher than the men.
You've been asked to take your own questionnaire many times, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. We had a couple we scribbled down. Not for your questionnaire, but from another.
Can whatever you them? Want.
Yeah. Stones, Beatles, or the Supremes?
Stephen Sondheim.
I like that answer. If you were a musical instrument?
The problem with a question like musical instrument is that the answer sounds very self-flattering. For example, mm-hmm. I think of an instrument I'd love to listen to, a cello. But it says, I'm a cello? I don't know. Maybe I'm only a piccolo. or a bassoon. Or a buffoon, if you would listen to Will Ferrell.
People frequently break down when speaking of things that are deep and important to them here. Although, as you note, you don't keep a box of Kleenex here, and we see none visible.
No, you don't see a box of Kleenex on the desk, do you?
Have you ever broken down?
Once. I'm very guarded. I, who am always asking people to be open and not to conceal or to hold back, that I myself am very guarded. I'm guarded in life. And Will Ferrell has shown me to be a rather distant person, which I think I'm not. But the fact is that I sometimes wondered why, for 13 years, other people have been so moved, and I remain as impermeable and impervious as Will portrays me. But one person broke through that guardedness. And that was Liza Minnelli. When Liza was here on the stage, she sang her heart out that night, song after song, and illustrated for our students, because she's a very good teacher, she's taught in our school, the way in which she approaches each song as an acting exercise with a character who's singing that song, and she knows all about that character. And she elected to sing one song, staying in her chair there, close to me. That was the fateful moment. She sang a song, an Aznavour song called Mon Amour, and she got me. And I didn't think it would ever happen. And she turned to me at the end, she looked at me, she said, oh, Jimmy, because we've known each other a long time, Jimmy. And that was the time that I went, and I said, I thought it would never happen, I'm sorry, and I just mopped my face with my hands, and we went on with the show.
In the book, you profess to be only delighted about Will Ferrell's impersonation.
That's right.
But I have to tell you, sitting across the table from you here, when you just talked about how he portrays you as being aloof, remote,
yeah.
I got the sense that you don't like that part of his imitation. You don't like to be thought
of. Oh, no, there's nothing I don't like about Will Ferrell's imitation of me.
Or that you don't like to be thought of as being aloof.
No. What I was saying was that I'm not aloof, not at all. I'm engaged. I'm as engaged as I am with you now on the stage. But certainly, compared to my guests, I am less animated than they are. My job in this chair is to ask the questions and then get out of the way.
On the 13th of January, 1931, right here in New York City, magic happened. An artist was born that would rival Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo. But his tools would not be pen, nor brush, nor chisel, nor palette. His tools would be his comically oversized glasses and his soul. So please, welcome the greatest performer ever to have graced this earth, Charles Nelson Reilly.
Will Ferrell took that and built it into something which is very funny, which is that I'm not listening to them, which is that I'm so full of myself that I have no interest in what they're saying, which is that I'm busy thinking about the next wonderful sesquipedalian word that I can invent, like scrumptolescent. I don't do that. But it certainly is easy enough to extract that from my persona on the stage. And no, there's nothing to which I object in his interpretation of me.
Well, thank you so much. James Lipton, his new book is Inside, Inside.
Thank you very much.
And you can read an excerpt from James Lipton's book at NPR.org, where you can also sign up for our podcast called At Your Leisure. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.